Here for the Lowe's early Black Friday deals? You're right on time for some of our biggest savings. We're talking up to 50% off select major appliances, plus up to an extra 25% off when you bundle select major appliances. Holiday lights going up soon? Select ladders are up to 50% off right now. Get Black Friday prices without the Black Friday crowds. Lowe's, we help you save. Valid through 11/19. Selection varies by location. Select locations only. While supplies last. See Lowe's.com for more details.
Travolting presents Bobbin for Robin, hosted by Jeff Sweeney and Stuart Elmore. Covering Can I Do It? Till I Need Glasses. Enjoy the episode.
Stuart, how excited are you to talk about the sequel to the iconic comedy film, If You Don't Stop It, You'll Go Blind?
God damn it, Jeff. I told you not to look into any of this shit.
The iconic sequel.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Bobbin for Robin.
It's true.
I should say welcome back. No, it's the first episode. Yeah. So welcome to the first inaugural episode of Travolting Presents Season 4, Bobbin for Robin.
Yes.
A show where we are the only ones out there talking about actors' movies.
Yes.
There's no other podcast.
We're the only two white guys in the country recording a movie podcast right now.
You know, I do go on Spotify and I like Google like actors' names and I click podcast to see if there are podcasts for them.
Yes.
You know, with Robin, funny enough, I think the only one that I can think of, because I did this for Fraser and I did this for Travolting.
Yes.
There's a podcast called Knowing, Robin Williams. Well, and it's from Macmillan Podcast. And it looks like they're just doing excerpts from the book. Like they're just talking about, like, from pieces of the book. Because a lot of the
It's
titles,
a podcast from 2019.
Yeah, a lot of these episodes share chapters in David Scoff's book. So I really think it's just like talking about Robin as a person.
It's just a podcast about his life.
Yeah. Did you know, like, I told you that there's a Travolta Cage.
Yeah, we've talked about this.
There's a Travolta Cage. There's a Brendan Fraser Turns of Phrase.
Yes.
He got a good name on that one.
They have a good
one. Got to give them some props.
Yeah.
It's
to basically get to where you're going with this, we're going to be one of the first who's gone through all of Robin's movies.
Because there's a lot.
There are a lot of them.
Yes.
And inexplicably, it starts with this movie.
It does. But it's a funny story how it starts with this movie, though,
yes.
Oddly enough, which we're going to get into. But first, before we talk about the movie.
Yes.
As we do in all of our pilot episodes of seasons, we talk about, we got a little bit of context.
Yeah, we
got
to talk about a little bit. Who is, if you somehow have been living under a rock for however many decades, and you're emerging now, and the first thing you do to ingratiate yourself into the new culture is listen to this podcast. You might ask yourself, who is Robin Williams?
Who is Robin Williams? Not to be confused with Robin Wright, the other actress. Not to be confused with Robbie Williams, who's... Yes. Did you see the trailer for the Robbie Williams?
Yeah, the Robbie Williams movie looks good as hell.
It looks
a
pretty
better
good.
Man with him as the monkey?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is that because he wants to act in it, but he knows he's not a good actor?
No, it's they just thought, well, I should be a monkey in this movie.
But like Pharrell Williams is doing like his own like little...
Pharrell did the Lego movie.
The Lego movie bit.
I can...
Is that the thing now? Like everyone
No, the
does?
Lego movie happened because of a rights thing.
Because, I did not know this.
Because Pharrell wanted to do an animated biography, autobiography movie.
Okay.
And Universal had just gotten the rights to the Legos and wanted to make a Lego movie.
Oh, shit.
And he was just like, what if I do it in Lego? Will you pay for it? And they said yes.
Okay, bet.
Anyway, but...
Robin Williams.
Yes.
So I like how you were gearing up to start talking about it.
Yeah.
I'm going to talk about it.
Yeah, you're going to talk about it.
Is this cool for you?
Yeah, talk about it.
Okay. Robin Williams was born in Chicago, Illinois.
He was.
That's
Go Bears.
Duh Bears. The Bears. Yes. All right. Sorry. So, born in on July 21st, 1951, Chicago, Illinois, to his parent Robert Fitzgerald Williams and his mom Lori McLaurin Williams. So he was born in Chicago, but very quickly they moved into a suburb outside of Chicago, Lake Forest. Get off the fucking Wikipedia and just.
What do you want me to just be silent?
What am I? What am I doing?
Talking?
Yeah. No. You're right. Just come
all right,
on.
All right, fine.
Just come on. You got to let go of control.
I will offer commentary where it is appropriate.
So this is going to be 3 hours long. So him and his family, they quickly move out to Lake Forest, a suburb just a little bit outside of Chicago. His father worked as a senior executive for Ford. His mother used to be a model, but was mainly just kind of like a homemaker, stay-at-home mom. And both his parents had children with their previous marriage. So, and this will be important later in the film in the context of Robin's life. Rob Williams, his dad, his son was named Todd, and he was old. He was a half brother's older, and Lori also had a son who they named McLaurin. Which, if he kept his mom's maiden name, his name would be McLaurin. But that's just
that. Yeah, we don't be doing that,
right? So, to that degree, they're. I don't know the specifics on like one gets raised by the grandparents, and one lives with his mom. But so Robin is, for the most part, in his early childhood, is kind of an only child. And with his father working at Ford Motor Company, they're pretty well off. They're pretty wealthy. And so, but what happens is they move around a little bit. So they lived in Lake Forest up until Robin was around 12. And then his father got transferred to Detroit. They moved to another suburb, a little bit outside of Detroit, where they lived for a few years. And then his father then took an early retirement, and they moved again when Robin was 16 to Tiburon, California, which is, again, another suburb outside of San Francisco. So it's noted in, as I'm reading the biography and doing more research on Robin, it's noted that, Robin will say, had said in interviews, that he was kind of a lonely child, that he had to make up these characters and voices and little games. He had a toy soldier collection kit that he would play with a lot. And that was kind of his way to fill in the time. Now, his mom would go on to later say that it wasn't that he was lonely. It was the fact that he was such a people pleaser right out of the gate. And part of that came from the fact that his parents, who are very wealthy, they would not only move him around a lot where he doesn't get to keep as close friends as he might be able to in a regular home that doesn't move around as a lot. He kind of develops that military kid syndrome without actually being in the military. So they moved to San Francisco. He continues throughout school.
You're going to San Francisco.
Jeff Sweeney, ladies and gentlemen.
Be sure to wear.
And so he continues through high school. And when he graduates in 1969, he's voted most likely not to succeed and funniest by his classmates. It gets enrolled in a private university, paid for by his dad, Jeff.
It's a good song. Keep it going.
Okay. So he goes there initially to study political science, which is kind of funny.
It is very funny.
I think Robin is going to study political science.
It's going to really pay off when he's in Lee Daniels, the butler.
It's going to really pay off when he's in Man of the Year.
Yeah, Man of the Year.
But through that, he started doing some more acting stuff. So it was at this private institution. The college was Claremont Men's College, boys only school.
Yes.
A boys only school that had a very rigid, disciplined, kind of gloomy outlook. on things. And then you watch his role in the Dead Poets Society, and it's like, oh, okay. Hey. Like, things connect. But so they're all about, like, you go to this college to get a STEM degree, you become a doctor or a lawyer or whatever. And Robin's doing great in school and grades, by the way. Like,
he's a good student.
He was voted class president and a senior, and, like, he's a good student. But then he joins theater. And then it all came crashing down.
Yes.
He had to pick an elective. He chose theater. He did also joined an improv group. And it's described in almost every single biography or outlet you look at that the moment Robin joins theater at Claremont Men's College is where it all fell apart.
Yeah, it all changes.
He immediately starts flunking all of his classes. He stops showing up to classes. And at one point, like, he has to drop out of college because they plunk him out.
Yeah.
And his dad is like, what the fuck, Robin?
Yeah.
Like, I just paid for a whole year of tuition. And that's when he says, like, Dad, I want to be an actor. Mm. And his dad.
The worst thing a parent could hear.
Right. The worst thing a parent, like.
The worst thing a parent wants to hear.
Well, it's like, and Rob Williams is, you know, he's a war hero. He fought in World War II. He was in the Navy and was injured and was given a Purple Heart. Like, this guy is, like, made of stone and steel, Rob Williams has described.
Yeah.
He nicknamed him Lord Posh. And his mom was Punky because his mom was the more free-loving, free-spirited type. And so, like, you just got to imagine, like, Rob, like, this stern, like, military business exec, Rob Williams, hearing, like, Dad, I want to be an actor. And so Rob, of course, says, like, you know, that's great that you have some dreams, but maybe learn a skill just to have in your toolkit, yeah, like welding, which that's a story that Robin will say in, like, almost every interview after he talks about how it was telling his parents about being, like, wanting to be an actor. But what I learned it later in the biography is he actually did take welding classes.
Oh, but well, that's something. At least.
Yeah. He actually took welding classes, but it was when the welding instructor is like, careful, you got to make sure you do it like this or else you go blind. And then he dropped out. He's like, fuck that. I'm not doing that. So Robin then enrolls in a community college called College of Marin, where he meets a drama professor who they joined that drama program. So he's actually, like, majoring in, like, performance acting and theater at this school. And this drama professor sees a lot of hope and a lot of potential in Robin. He cast him as Fagin in the production of Oliver. And that's, like, the production where the professor's like, oh my God, this guy's fucking got
good.
Like, and so he, through a friend, he was able to get Robin an audition for Juilliard. So
yes,
he auditions, and in 1973, he gets in. But not only does he get in, he gets in on a full scholarship.
Which is incredible.
And he gets in at, that Juilliard, a little bit pretext, like, Juilliard doesn't do, like, grades, like, freshman or sophomore. They're groups.
Yeah.
And it's, like, depending on which group you were going to come into determined, like, you could skip over some of the basic classes and go straight into the advanced year, which is what Robin did when he first got in. He got in as group four. He was among, like, William Hurt, Mandy Patinkin, Christopher Reeve
who becomes a lifelong friend.
Who they become lifelong friends. And so he obviously goes, and it's what's funny about this little chapter in Robin's life is he is, like, a California boy through and through. And his, like, main teenage years are, like, late 60s, early 70s. So, yeah. Like, he said, you know, they didn't, the Summer of Love wasn't happening in my backyard, but you could still see, like, they were just taking up, like, the tent stakes. Like, that was, like, where
the level
it was at. So this guy's, like, described as wearing, like, joggers, like, sandals, and a tie-dye shirt with rainbow suspenders, and he's walking on the side street of New York.
Yeah.
Like, that's the level this guy is walking into Juilliard with. And I think it's phenomenal.
It's very funny.
So he goes in, and immediately, like, he goes into the drama program, which is, people think Juilliard is this very, like, prestigious school. Their drama program had only been, like, I want to say, like, six 6 or 10 years old. Not that old.
Yeah, it was fairly recent.
And so, of course, they bring in a bunch of these like theater people, and they're all about like Shakespearean like acting on stage. Robin, of course, not quite his style. If you've seen some of his movies, like, and so he's going to classes and he's trying to like, you know, maintain like the favorite professors, but like in classic Robin fashion, he seems more, his professors will tell him, it's like, you seem more interested in having fun for yourself than us having fun, meaning the audience. And so, you know, cause Robin's like just a speedball on stage all the time. He's also a speedball, like kind of in person. Like it depends on like which Robin you were going to get. Like Robin was either going a million miles a minute in your ear about something or he was just quiet.
Yes.
It's no doubt that like Robin, I don't know actually for sure. I think I may be wrong about this, but I don't think he ever got firmly an ADHD diagnosis, but this is like a classic tale of like
undiagnosed
like ADHD Robin Williams, but like thank God for it though, kind of in this sort of instance.
So he basically spends a few years in Juilliard and like hones his craft there.
Yeah, well, hones his craft is an interesting term for it. Like he definitely like learns some of like techniques and tools that you have at your disposal as an actor, but he never quite loses track of like what his style kind of is. But so to that point, like after the first year, he drops down from group 4 to group 6.
Yeah.
And then, or actually, that was actually after the first semester. And so in the spring semester, you know, some of his like professors are like, bro, like you're a stand-up comic. You're not an actor.
Yeah.
Like this is all very funny what you're doing, but like, you know, we need you to actually like give us something. So by the end of that year, they actually all had a conversation with Robin, like the professor, staff, and administration, and they convinced that he needed to drop out. And so Robin drops out of Juilliard after his first year.
Mm-hmm.
So I have to say, like, folks, if you're...
Folks,
listen.
Sorry.
You know, this is what makes Robin like another really good like figure to kind of, I say look up to in the sense, but like just think for someone like Robin Williams, who went through 3 different colleges, never got a degree. He's dropping out, flunking all these classes, and then this look at what he turns into. So just have that in mind. So he leaves. So he leaves Juilliard and he goes back to California.
Yes.
And it's at this point when he's like pretty depressed. He's like, okay, well now I don't really know what I'm going to do. So what does he do is he's like 25, 26 at this point. He decides like, I'm just going to get a job where I can. He works a busboy at a nightclubs, a few places. Mm-hmm. And that's where he's able to make some connections and where he starts to go to comedy clubs. San Francisco was just having like a little bit of a resurge comeback of comedy clubs. And so he starts going. One in particular that he went to a lot and did some performances was called Holy City Zoo. That's like credited as being like Robin's like birthplace of comedy. And so he starts doing some more stand-up routines. He starts honing in like the actual craft of being a stand-up comedian.
Yeah.
Everyone's recognizing him. This is the classic example of Robin becoming a big fish in a small pond. He gets a big name for himself. It's where he also meets his first wife, Valerie. Valerie, who like she was a cocktail waitress at another bar in San Francisco. They met, hit it off right away. And as they're going back and forth, you know, they're all asking themselves the question. It's like, well, we can stay here and like run San Francisco, or we can pack up the car and drive 5 hours south and go to LA and try to see if we can make it happen.
Mm-hmm.
And Robin's like, let's fucking go. Let's do it. So I think they don't go at the same time. They go around differently, but I think Robin goes first and immediately he starts pitching up his tent and going around the different venues. Comedy in LA, this is around the time period Jay Leno is like popping.
Yeah.
This is Richard Pryor's time.
Yeah.
This is George Carlin.
This is the big comedy boom.
This is a huge...
SNL is starting at this
time. SNL is starting at this time. Like David Letterman just moved there from Indiana. Yeah.
This is something that we get to talk about a little bit. is kind of like the early, you know, days of like mass stand-up comedy. And like there are comedians before this, but this is a new wave. You know, the new Hollywood is in its swing at this time.
Yeah.
And kind of the counterculture is becoming the culture.
Yes.
Which is leading to things like SNL. You know, I watched the movie Saturday Night, which is somewhat fictionalized, but is a fun look at like that era of comedy rising.
Yeah.
You know, the Caddyshack, all these new types of comedy movies are coming in. Ivan Reitman's era is about to start.
Yeah.
All those names you just pulled from, like Richard Pryor, Woody Allen, Billy Crystal.
Yeah.
All these guys are starting up at this time.
Yeah.
It's a fascinating era for comedy, which we'll get to, which we're kind of tapping on, which is fun.
Well, and it's great because like this is around like the 70s and like comedy is getting like raunchy, like fucking dirty. Yeah. Like this is where like your college humor was, you could say on stage and people would laugh at. And you're like, oh, this is new. I mean, like when you get George Carlin and Richard Pryor, like they kind of make, they're the breakaway for that kind of stuff. I'm sure there's like comedy geeks out there that are going to correct me on that. But like, they're definitely the titans in this era right now is Richard Pryor at the very least. Yeah. So Robin starts going around the town and he works wherever he can, but he first starts at the LA Improv, and then he gets recognized by a little bit more. He then gets an audition to go to the Comedy Store run by Mitzi Shore. He is able to get a weekend stipend for showing up, doing gigs, running the bar, running the door. Comedy Store is very much like it's its own little small hamlet of a community where everybody does everything. And so, but the Comedy Store and the LA Improv are like the two biggest like goalpost of comedy in the city. So he's doing both.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when he gets recognized by management companies. So he gets signed on to a management company. And they're like, okay, like let's start getting this guy. Like, what do you want to do? He's like, I want to act. And you're like, you want to be an actor? I'm like, yeah, like that's what I really want to do. Like, I really want to be an actor.
Mm-hmm.
So they're talking and, you know, I'm going to skip ahead just a little bit and bear with me here, folks. Like I'm almost towards the
don't want to get into Mork and Mindy.
No, I don't want
to get into that yet.
No. Okay. I'm only just saying I'm going to get right up to where they're about to do that.
Mm-hmm.
So like he starts doing a couple of little things here and there, like mostly like sketch group comedy skits, things like that. He does a tiny little production called Can I Do It Till I Need Glasses, which is a real movie. It's not that it's not a real movie.
Yeah.
It's actually a sequel to the movie If You Don't Stop It, You'll Go Blind. I'll describe like what this kind of movie is later, but what the audience should really know going into this is, Can I Do It Till I Need Glasses? Is if what if a bunch of college age
stoner
improv, you're like, if you were in college and the improv club that were all stoners got together and made like a movie that had 99, if not 100% sex jokes.
Yeah.
Like
it's borderline pornography.
It's borderline pornography
at some points.
Well, so like,
which is such an exciting way to start this series.
It is a very exciting way. But Robin does this and all of his scenes are cut.
Yeah, he's paid $150.
And his scenes are cut.
He's in two segments.
Two segments, doesn't make the final cut.
Yeah.
And so, boys, why is this the first episode if he was never in this thing? Well, I got two words for you. Mork and Mindy.
That's three words. But
two names, I should say.
Two names.
And so what happens is like...
this comes out, it's a flop.
Without Robin.
Without Robin.
And Robin starts getting a little bit more famous in the TV realm.
Yeah.
He does he plays Mork on the Happy Days episode that creates itself into becoming its own spinoff show, Mork and Mindy.
Yeah.
So Robin's name is on billboards everywhere. And like this guy is on Time Magazine. And it's like, holy shit, Robin Williams. Who is this guy? What's his deal? And then the people over at this production company of Can I Do It Till I Need Glasses, I think it's I, Robert
Some Levy. Classic hucksters.
Yeah. They're like, hey, Bill, still got the negatives on that little thing we did a few months ago? And they're like, yeah, why? It's like, You think we could dig through that and find what we cut of Robin and put it back in?
It is described as producer Mike Calley spends 2 weeks sorting through deleted footage to find the Robin Williams scenes.
Yes.
So they could splice it back in and release the movie with Robin as top billing.
Top billing of Robin Williams.
Yes, it's starring Robin Williams. Can I do it till I need glasses?
Of course, you know, ABC, the company that's funding and financing and producing Mork and Mindy, yeah. The same company that does Happy Days, yeah. Laverne and Shirley.
Not thrilled about
Robin being on the front page of a fucking borderline porno.
Like the worst movie you've ever seen.
So his management company is like, we gotta go, we gotta stop this. So they sue the production company. They sue Mike Calley, the producer, to being like, hey, no, you can't do this anymore.
Yeah. No, please.
No, please. Please make this stop. And they're able to work out a deal where they get to keep Robin in the movie, but he gets like bottom billing. Yeah. But if you watch the movie, the way that they bill Robin, it's like, and of course,
Robin Williams.
And it's like, they're still kind of doing it, but
they're being a little cheeky.
So that's, ladies and gentlemen, where we come to is this movie, Can I Do It? Till I Need Glasses.
A sequel to If You Don't Stop It, You'll Go Blind.
How was that episode one context corner? That was great.
You did a very nice job. Okay. Golf clap.
Thank you.
Firm goal. I feel sufficiently caught up in Robin Williams. Because with our last show, Easy Riders, I read the Winona biography for, you know, it only went up to Alien Resurrection.
Yeah.
But on this one, Stuart's reading Robin by Dave Itzkoff, and he'll kind of keep us in the loop about Robin's life as we go through this.
Movie is billed as the nuttiest, laughiest, looniest, gooniest, funniest madcap comedy of the year.
It is true. You know what? It is not. The nuttiest, it might be the naughtiest, but it's not the nuttiest, the looniest, the gooniest, the funniest, or the most madcap movie of the year. I would decidedly say.
Jeff, the audience will be able to see it, but like, this is how much I read to get up to like Mork and Mindy.
Yeah, it's a substantial part. I mean, it's a lot of his early life. It's like a third of his total life, like 25 years.
You think it's like, you know, one of the key things that I think, we're just talking about Robin now at this point, and we'll get to the movie at some point. You know, Robin kind of has like an aimless period for a long time.
Yeah.
I mean, like, it's sort of, I hate to say it kind of this way, but like, maybe you'll agree, maybe you'll disagree, but like, pretty common for like kids of like that come from a wealthy family. They have chances to like fail or succeed at things and give things a try, and maybe they'll like it, maybe they won't. I feel like, you know, when you don't have like a second shot, you're a little bit more careful about what you pick. Robin is like, Can I Do It to Any Glasses, 1977. But shortly after, like, Mork and Mindy comes out. Mork and Mindy, first episode airs on 78. Robin's born in 1951.
Yeah.
So he's 27.
Yeah.
27 years old to get your first film. Like, how old is Winona?
Winona was 14.
14.
But I do feel like, especially in this period, like, it can take time for, especially in comedy, for you to really figure out your thing.
Yeah.
Not everyone's Eddie Murphy who just, like, walks on the scene and is immediately successful at, like, 19.
Right.
You know, Robin had to, you know, figure out exactly where in the world of acting he wanted to be. He had to grind it out in the clubs. Yeah. He's like a real like self-made success story in the entertainment industry.
Yeah, he is like very like whatever you say, it's like he definitely isn't like a one-hit wonder.
Yes.
Like wonder kid. He doesn't get like the one role. Like, trust me. Like,
it took him time to figure it out, hone his skills.
Yeah.
And then eventually he got the big break.
Yeah, eventually he got the big break.
And this movie is like not the big break. This movie is in the honing your skills era, because he's just like, he's a bit player in two segments of the movie.
Yeah. I mean, like, I named the first era of this, of what we're talking about, the comedian.
Yeah.
The comedian. Because
everyone's favorite character from Watchmen.
Yeah, exactly. Because that's primarily who he is right now. He's a comedian that gets cast in movies.
Yes.
He's not reached like the stage of like, Robin the actor. He's Robin the comedian who can act.
Yes.
And then once we get past like Good Morning Vietnam, that's where it's like, Robin's an actor. And like, you know what's interesting? Especially like people who mostly know him for his family stuff, who have never listened to an actual Robin Williams stand-up in their life, and they're shocked when they realize like how raunchy he is. Like, but that's what I mean.
This is the type of comedy he's coming up in.
Yeah, well, and it's explained that like Robin's type of comedy is he's not like you, Jeff.
He likes bits.
He does bits.
He likes bits.
He likes bits. He doesn't and have
oh
like
boy is this movie chock full of bits.
Chock full of
I will
fucking bits.
Unfortunately, basically none of them are successful, but
no, none of them are successful. I don't remember like there was like one was the dude that jacking off on the bus.
Yeah, he was having a good time.
And he was like, "Father, you're right if I smoke next to you?" "Oh, that's okay."
And then sometimes you meet nice people on the bus.
Yeah.
The thing is that's funny is like in this era, like to listen to him, the best way to describe like the structure of this movie is it's 73 minutes long, and it is just like a bunch of 1 to 2 minute mini skits.
Yeah.
It's like when you go to a comedy club and you know they do their show and it's like just a bunch of like little skits that they do.
Yeah.
Ranging between like 1 to 5 minutes.
Most of it mostly improv, but yeah.
Yeah. And this is just that on a slightly larger scale.
Yeah.
And then releasing because like the only place you could show something like this is in a theater. You know, there weren't phones, there weren't TVs at home. I mean, there were TVs at home, but they didn't have like, you know, VHS or anything. And so something like this would just make its way to all of the like college theaters was the idea.
Yeah.
Where it would like have some cheap jokes, some boobs on screen, and the college kids would love it.
Yeah.
They loved the first one. None of them went to go see this one.
I'm surprised it people went and saw the first
pretty,
one.
Pretty quick.
Yeah.
The first one has a plot overarching.
Oh.
It's like some kind of contest and each contestant like cuts away. This movie has no structure to it.
Yeah, right.
It's like this movie's very lazy. And it's just like, here's a skit, here's a skit. There's a few funny jokes scattered throughout it.
Apparently its budget's $750,000 and it grossed $3.5 million.
But
so.
it was funny. Well, after Robin, it becomes a success.
Yeah, that's, yeah.
It's funny. My wife, Becca, walked through the room and she made the observation that is true that essentially this movie is like a modern, like you don't get movies like this anymore. They don't make anthology comedies of this scale. If they do, it's like 4 short films.
I would say like the 10, but like even then.
Like the 10 is like 6 short films. It's not like, it's not like, you know, each skit's a minute long.
Right, yeah.
And she was like, this movie is the 1976 equivalent of just like scrolling on TikTok.
Yeah.
And there's like a bunch of 1 minute skits on TikTok that you're just scrolling through.
Yeah.
Or social media in general.
This movie is a doom scroll.
Yes. This movie is. And I feel doom scroll during.
Do you feel doom scrolled during this?
Look, when we got to the section where it was the rapist comes to the door.
Yes.
And the guy's like, take my money. He's like, no, I'm not a burglar. I'm a rapist. And the guy just turns to his wife and just like, honey, he's for you. Like. At some point, I'm just like, all right, maybe enough of this. All right.
It's just like the most like, and the fucking whistle bits.
Yeah.
Just.
Or the amount of white people playing Native Americans in this movie.
Yo.
There's like.
Can we talk about
that
like for a second?
There's like one section where it's the lone, they're doing like the Lone Ranger. They call him like the masked stranger.
Yeah.
And they have a guy playing Tonto, which is not great.
It's not awesome.
But like, I'm like, all right, well, this is a shitty Native American joke, but at least we won't be coming back to this. And then there's like clearly where however they made this movie, they had access to an Old West film set.
Yeah.
Probably from some other production. It kind of looks like the Gunsmoke set, but they had access to a film like a West set. And they decide we will just keep coming. We will just have so many skits in this Old West set about Native Americans and we will have our whitest people play them.
It's horrible.
It's like a nightmare. It just keeps happening.
What was the one where he was like, not moving, and he's like, bowels.
Yeah, bowels.
Right. Bowels not moving, and he's like, oh, take these pills, and he's like, bowels not moving.
Yes.
That was pretty funny.
Yeah. There's
You hate it. You hate it so much.
This movie's so bad.
It's so bad. It's
there are a few good jokes. I like the guy who's wearing nothing but a barrel, and then he walks into the IRS office, and he comes out nude.
Yeah,
because they took. The last thing from him. That's a little funny.
It's a little funny.
The
guy jerking off on the bus.
Robin's like, second section is funny.
The tooth one?
The first one, I don't really even get the joke where he's like...
Can you repeat the date with the lawyer?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Where he's like the lawyer and this woman's like
He's like, he says like, Madam Smith, did you not like have sex with this person on a bowl in the thunderstorm? Blah, 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 blah. Yeah. And he's like,
yeah.
Can you repeat the date again?
Yeah. It's like, great.
I don't know.
Robin's second bit is pretty funny.
Yeah.
Because he walks up to a doctor's office and has a tooth hanging above it.
Yeah.
And he's got like, you know, the classic wrapping around his head as if he has a sore tooth.
Yeah.
Or a toothache. And he's like, doctor, you got to help me out. And the guy's like, I'm not a dentist.
I'm a gynecologist.
And Robin's like, gynecologist, why do you have the tooth above your door? And the guy says, good God, man, what do you expect me to hang up there? And then goes into the doctor's office.
Yeah.
It's like kind of funny. Like you want him to hang up a vagina, right?
This, literally that, that.
This is me like scraping the bottom of the barrel to find something funny in this.
What if like first episode we show up with this and I just look at you dead and I'd be like, it's good, Jeff.
That would be crazy.
That's the way we start the season.
Because like so many of these skits, it's just like there's the mass stranger one where it's the guy playing Tondo just running through the woods.
Yeah.
And he gets to the town.
Suck poison. Yeah.
Yeah. And he's like, suck the poison. But then he finds out that the rattlesnake bit the Max Stranger on the penis, and so he'd have to suck his dick. Like, and he says, you're going to die.
I have news. You're going to die.
Yeah. But then he survives later. I don't know.
It doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter.
My favorite bit is, if you look it up on the Wikipedia, can I do it till I need glasses? And you go to the plot section. The Wikipedia graciously put a big box that just said, this article needs a plot summary, which it clearly will never get because there is no plot summary. Please add one in your own words. February 2024. Do you want to add a plot summary?
No.
To the can I do it?
There is no
glasses?
Plot. What can you summarize? What does a plot summary for this movie look like? You recount every single bit. It would be 7 paragraphs long.
I don't know, man.
Sexually oriented comedy sketches.
Yeah. That's a good way to put it.
Well, this movie's ultimately, it's just like it's a cheap attempt to get some kids, get some college kids to
maybe
suck
naked
some
on
money
camera.
Out of them.
Yeah. Just be naked on camera.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not Robin.
Yeah, not Robin.
Robin was never naked on camera.
Yeah.
He didn't give that up so easy.
Yeah, not yet.
Not yet. He will. Jeff's starting to sweat.
No, I'm not going to sweat. I would like to see it. No. No. Like the thing is, like, we're starting with this fucking movie. Like, what else is there to say? What else is there really to say? I'm glad you had a lot of Robin context, because otherwise I've just been like, Robin's second bit's kind of funny. I like the barrel guy. And then this is kind of racist and sexist otherwise.
Yeah.
I'm glad I spent 73 minutes of my Sunday watching this.
But this will be... So what Robin's doing in this, like, part of his career is, like, he's essentially hopping on with a lot of his comedy buddies.
Yeah,
he's just to do a bunch of things. He does 2 episodes of the Richard Pryor Show.
Yeah.
Granted, this is right around the time Richard Pryor is like self-destructing, basically, at this point. Of alcoholism.
Is this before Superman 3? It has to be. Oh, yeah, Superman 3 is 1983.
Yeah, this has to be before.
A movie that has one of the best posters ever, which is Superman flying away with Richard Pryor in his hands.
Yeah. Well, and Richard Pryor's show is about to be canceled. He's in a failed revival attempt for the comedy sketch show Laugh-In, which is on NBC. We're not talking about TV. I just have to say it because that's a lot of his like early start is in TV. Mork and Mindy is like probably the biggest case of it. And then he's not really in another theatrical movie until Popeye.
Yeah.
Which is
4 years later.
4 years later. 4 years later.
Because Popeye is his real like first movie.
Popeye is his real first movie.
This is still the era where it's like you start in television and then you get promoted to film.
Yes.
And then once you're in film, you don't really do TV that much anymore.
But in Popeye, that was kind of like that is kind of in the sense like in a lot of his first movies, like you either saw him as a comedian or like Mork.
Yes.
And when he does Popeye, that's the movie where it's like, oh, that movie where Mork acts like
Popeye. He eats spinach.
Yeah.
It's big.
Or Mork, you know, pretends like he's muscular.
Yeah.
Like that's his accolades at this point in time.
So. Yes.
But we'll talk about that next week.
Yeah. Because
Popeye.
Is there anything else to say about Can I Do It Till I Need Glasses?
No, there's not. I wish there was.
Yeah.
But no. I think it's just funny that like
This literally would be a 5-minute episode if you had not had all access.
I just love that, like, Robin is getting, like, the break of his fucking career with Mork and Mindy.
Yeah. And
then
this shit's coming
out.
This shit's coming down.
You thought we were done. We're not done till I say I'm done.
We're still releasing this movie.
We're still releasing this movie with your name on the poster. And it's like, good God almighty, get it out.
But it's fun. There's something fun to it. It's funny that this is it. That this starts his career. Like, big things have small beginnings.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Ugh. Because, and talking about big things, like, next week.
Sorry, just the way you said it. We're going to big
talking about big things. We're going to talk about the Lone Rangers expanding. No.
Oh, what?
Because next week, we're going right into, like, his career. He, like, in earnest, it starts in 1980, and that doesn't stop.
Yes. Like, is Popeye his breakout? No. Like, his breakout movie is Good Morning Vietnam.
It's his breakout movie, but, like, right after Popeye, he's got World According to Garp.
Yeah.
That's something.
Yeah, I mean, like, a lot, but here's the thing. Like, what you're going to find is, like, and these movies might be...
This is kind of a little weird run, but...
No, what I'm saying, it's, like, because he's trying to, like, he's trying his best to, like, get his career to go in a direction he wants it to go in.
Yeah.
But he's tied down to the fact that, like, his name is Robin Williams.
Yes.
And he's... the funny guy. He's the comedian. And everybody who guys, like, The World According to Garp, if I'm not mistaken, is, like, one of his earlier, like, dramatic roles. And the come away from that movie is just like, Robin, you need to be funny.
Yeah.
Like, why aren't you funny in this movie, Robin? Mm-hmm. And so he has to struggle with that for a lot of his next few movies. Again, like,
because that's what Good Morning Vietnam figures out is Good Morning, how to synthesize his comedy with the dramatic story.
Exactly, Jeff. Right,
and
there.
We will talk about it when we get to it.
Yeah,
but that is like one of the most successful. Like, we are going to, like, cross the streams.
We talk about it with our last three actors of, like, you need an actor that knows John
they
Travolta,
figure it out.
Brendan Fraser, Winona Ryder. Like, how do you synthesize? It's a whole chapter in the book on like Good Morning Vietnam of, like, just that perfect. Barry Levinson, like, meeting Robin and figuring him out and knowing how to use him. Oh my God, it's a great chapter in the book. It's really good.
But all that being said, I'm very excited to talk about Popeye. I've never seen it.
I feel like I've seen
Robert Altman's Popeye.
Robert Altman, like, this guy starts out of the gate working with fucking Robert Altman.
Yes,
like, that's
covering me. Popeye.
Covering.
Eat my spinach. I'm gonna watch some. I'm gonna. Where can I stream Popeye?
I'm sure it's somewhere.
The cartoon, to be clear. Oh. Like, where can I watch? I have a Blu-ray of Popeye. There's a 43-minute compilation on YouTube. I will be watching that. Just, like, start playing.
Good. And you can still find this. The nice thing is, well, I don't know if it's a nice thing, but a fair amount of these movies that Robin are in are, you could find them.
Yeah, they're around.
We don't have to dig into the deep, like, you know, freemovies.org.
I don't have to do the shit that I was doing for some of those. I mean, I'm sure I will have to do for some of them.
Well, you'd be surprised. I think a lot of these are pretty accessible.
Yeah.
Which is the one thing, because would you say this is the biggest actor we're covering?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Undoubtedly. Mark Tilly, who we saw last night, was like, you've covered a lot of, like, A-minus listers. This is, like, an A-lister. Like, Robin never, even in his flop eras, he's still, like, everybody knows who he is and loves him.
Yeah.
But all that being said, next week, we're talking Popeye.
We're
going to have a guest, I'm pretty sure. So we will, it'll be a good time.
It will be a great time.
In the erstwhile. Please remember
buddy. Thank you very much. Please remember to rate, review, and subscribe.
All right, he's doing it
on whatever platform you're listening on. You can find us on Apple Podcast, YouTube, Spotify, Amazon Music, Pandora, iHeartRadio. You can find us on a bunch of different things. You can go out. You can follow us at Blue Sky at Travolting Pod or Instagram. We are no longer on X because fuck Elon Musk and fuck what he stands for. And thank you so much for Rebecca Johnson for for graphic design, amazing graphic design for the Robin Williams season. And thank you so much to Michael Van Bodegem Smith for the theme music, whose music is taking you out right now. Thank you so much for tuning in. See you next week for Papa.